Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight, on September 21st, 2017. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For additional information, visit their website at academyofforeignlanguages.com, that's all spelled out, or call 310-975-4133.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And, of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and executive producer of The South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well this morning, Joe. How are you? It looks like rain out there.
It rained over here in North Redondo.
It did? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have a chance
to
really go outside yet this morning, but I'm just looking out the window. It looks like dark kind of rainish clouds. But speaking of the weather, I took out my down comforter earlier this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep, it's down comforter time.
Yeah, which is weird because normally we generally get through the end of October, early November with just like a light blanket. Last week there were a couple of nights I went to bed and I was laying under the blanket and I was cold. I was like, okay, it's time to get the blanket, the big blanket, the big guns out. So so I put my comforter on this weekend.
It was cold for a couple of days, but of course we'll have our Indian summer. It will come, but
are you sure?
As sure as the sun comes up, I'm sure it will come.
I'm looking forward
to this event that we're going to talk about today, Jackie. It is one of our favorite events, and we missed it last year. We're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about this new venue, which is amazing. I think everyone in the South Bay is going to be talking about this. Jackie, who are our – I'm sorry?
Well, this is an iconic event. This is one of the South Bay's most iconic events. And as you said, we missed it last year. But it's back this year, and it's going to be bigger and better than ever. So I'm excited about
better than ever. Jackie, who are our guests today?
So we have a couple of returning guests this morning, Dix Croxall and Ray Johnson from the Palos Verdes Concours d'Elegance. Now, Dix Croxall has worked with the Palos Verdes Concours for the last 16 years as a class manager and exhibition committee chair. He also volunteers at the Automobile Driving Museum in El Segundo and previously at the Peterson Automotive Museum. He owns several collector cars and has run car events all over Southern California. Dick attended Cal Poly, where he was awarded Distinguished Alumni Status in 2000 and elected to the Cal Poly Engineering Hall of Fame in 2014. He is also an alumnus of the UCLA Anderson Graduate School of Business. Now, after graduation, Dick began a career in aerospace that spanned over 45 years. He was with TRW Space and Technology Laboratories and ultimately Northrop Grumman Space Technology for 39 years, ending his career in 2005 as Vice President and Chief Engineer for Northrop Grumman Space. He was also the lead executive for University Alliances and served on the Dean's Advisory Councils at UCLA, Cal Poly, USC, and Caltech Schools of Engineering. Dick and his wife Nancy currently reside in El Segundo, where his community activities include serving on El Segundo's Parks and Recreation Commission, the Board of Education, Chamber of Commerce, and coaching youth baseball. He currently spends his time consulting at the Aerospace Corporation, volunteering at automobile museums and car events, and playing with his collector cars. Now, Ray Johnson is the chairman of the Palos Verdes Concourse, and he has been a volunteer for the concourse for over 15 years. Now, in prior years, he was the co-chairman of the exhibition committee, which is responsible for obtaining and selecting the exhibition cars. Ray retired in 2015 from the Aerospiration, where he was vice president of space launch operations. So, Joe, as you mentioned this morning, our guests are going to fill us in on what attendees can expect at this year's concourse taking place at Louis Zamperini Field. At Louis Zamperini Field on Sunday, October 1st. We're so excited about this. Ray, Dick, welcome back to the program. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you,
Joe,
Jackie.
Yeah, we're pleased. And thank you for giving us the opportunity to be able to share some information on the show.
Well, we're thrilled. This is such a signature event, and my wife and I attended in 2015, and we were just blown away. I mean, obviously, the venue was iconic, the cars were iconic, and together it was like a painting. But paintings can be difficult, and let's talk a little bit about that.
In 2015, where was it at? Was it at Terranea in 2015? I don't remember.
No.
At Los Verdes. We were at Los Verdes Country Club in 2015.
Yeah. Los Verdes Country Club. It was beautiful, but difficult. Isn't that right, Dick?
Yeah, it was pretty tough. I think the biggest problem we had was all of the field people, including the vendors and the exhibitors, had to go in through one entrance and come down a narrow road into the facility. And getting them all in there before the showtime and out after the show turned out to be pretty much of a nightmare. And the show was great. It was on beautiful grounds at Los Verdes, but that plus the parking, the inconvenient parking up on top of the hill where we had to bus people down, cost us a lot of visitors and also follow-on people.
Right,
that was
right.
The parking was really the big problem. The team at Los Verdes Country Club were great to work with, and so we were really pleased working with them. But the problem was we didn't have good spectator parking, and we had to bus people from Peninsula Center, and that was just too far away.
So we went through a painful year of reimagining, almost like Disney Imagineers. We did a reimagining of the event. And what were the criteria, Ray, for the new venue that you were looking for?
We were looking for a lot of things, obviously. First and foremost, you want to have a good place to display the cars that's relatively easy to access. And then there's all the other infrastructure associated with it. You need to have good parking for the spectators. It has to be a positive experience for the spectators, obviously. And so it's great if you can get good adjacent parking for them. And also, about half of these cars come in on trucks and trailers. And so you need a place to be able to park about 60, 70, 80 trucks and trailers. So all of that, there's a big infrastructure that is required to support it. And after looking around and considering various venues, golf courses, for example, offer a good setting, but they don't necessarily provide the same sort of other infrastructure that you need. We met with Kurt Robinson at Robinson Helicopters, and he was interested in doing something for the community. And so Robinson is hosting us down at the Zamperini Field. And so we're going to be using their facility, where the cars are going to be on the tarmac side of the Robinson facility down there on the runway side. And the spectator parking is fantastic because we have over 1,500 parking slots for the Robinson parking slots. And so people can park right there and walk right into the show. And the city of Torrance has been very cooperative in that they're closing down a section of Airport Boulevard so that we can park our trucks and trailers right on Airport Boulevard. So the overall infrastructure is the best we've ever worked with.
I smell a long-term friendship here.
We hope so.
We certainly hope so. We'll see how it goes this year.
Yeah, because I imagine that outside of arenas, golf courses, like race courses, what other kind of facility could you have your event at?
Well, that's the challenge.
You need a lot of space. You need a lot of space.
You need a lot of space, and that's it. It needs to be a fairly nice setting too. So, it's we're looking forward to it. It's going to be, I think, a very impressive show.
Wow. Okay. Well, now we know where we're going to be. Louis Zamperini Field. This is amazing, and this is going to be taking place. Give us a little rundown, Ray, on the order of events. We would just want to talk about, because for some people who've not been to the Concours d'Elegance, maybe they don't know how it works. How does a concours work? And it's actually a competition, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, basically, for the spectators, the show hours are 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, so spectators should be arriving somewhere around that time frame. Now, the show cars and the airplanes, of course, are going to be getting there much earlier. Some of the airplanes are coming in Saturday afternoon. Some of the airplanes are coming in early Sunday morning, and then all the show cars show up early Sunday morning. So we'll have people arriving starting at 6 a.m. To be placed on the field. We'll have about 200 cars. There's going to be about 14, 15 airplanes. One of the things we're doing that's unique is that you're not going to walk in and see an airplane show on one side and a car show on the other side. We're actually intermixing the airplanes and the cars together. And so what we're trying to do is show planes of a certain era with cars of that same era. So the 1930s cars will have a 1930s airplane with them and match that. So you can compare and contrast, if you will, planes of the same time with the cars of the same time. And so it's shaping up to be a really exciting layout, much different than anything else that's ever been done.
This is exciting.
It is. Some of the most iconic automobile manufacturers were also airplane manufacturers or airplane engine manufacturers. I'm thinking now of Rolls-Royce, famous for many iconic automobiles, but also many iconic airplane engines. Are we going to have a Rolls-Royce and a Rolls-Royce engine airplane right next to each other?
I don't know about that. Actually, Dick, I'm trying to think. I know
next to each other, but we do have several Rolls-Royce. I can run through some of the classes for you and tell you what cars are in there. We do have a P-51 aircraft, which has a version of the Allison V-12 in it. But that's a featured aircraft, not immediately adjacent to the Rolls-Royces, but close.
Right. Very exciting. So, Dick, help me understand
Wait a minute. I have a question. The P-51, was that the plane that they taught fighter pilots in during World War II?
Oh, no. This was more or less a super fighter near the end of the war, something like 1943, 44, that came in and was better than anything the Germans had and was not a trainer for sure. It was a kind of a difficult plane to fly, but it was very fast and very effective against the German Air Force and basically was the closer, as in baseball, where they came in and pretty much finished off the deal. So they're beautiful aircraft and iconic, and we're just glad to have one.
Yeah, Jackie, they used a trainer, a biplane trainer, and we're going to have one of those. It's a Stearman biplane that they used as a first trainer.
No, the reason I was asking is earlier this year, I took a flight in a plane out of Zamperini, and I'm trying to remember the plane. All I remember about it is that it was a trainer during World War II, and I'm sorry, I just can't remember the name. I can look it up.
Was it a biplane?
No.
Probably not, Ray. It was a version of the F-4, one of the F-4Fs, something like that. But
I'll look it up. Anyway, continue.
Okay. Well, now, I want to come at this from the top, because some people are not familiar with how these concourses are the concours d'elegance, how it works. There are different classes of vehicles. So, Dick, take us through the different classes and
sure.
how they're arranged.
We have 19 classes this year, and it's really a dispersed field. We cover a lot of things that aren't normally covered in concours, and an example would be our race cars of special interest class, which has everything from Shirley Muldowney's Dragster to some sprint cars from the early days at Gilmore Field and a few other cars. And then it goes all the way to the pure classics. And our theme this year is elegance and speed. So the classes are almost evenly divided between elegance and speed. And we start with American Classics, and those are such cars as the Auburn Boat Tail Speedsters, the Chrysler Imperial, Lincolns, Duesenberg, and Stutz's. It's a really nice class. Then we also have closed American Classics, which includes the Marmons and the Cadillacs, Studebaker President, and a couple others. And then we have the featured marks, Packard and Porsche, which have a lot of cars of special interest. There's a 32 Packard Twin 6 Coupe Roadster that's owned by Darren Moore, who also is providing us with a P-51 aircraft. That car was owned by Clark Gable at one time, and several very high-end Packards, including some Darren's and some other interesting Packards from the 30s. And, by the way, I've driven a lot of cars from the 30s at the museums, and Packards were the best American car of the 30s, but they lost their recipe somewhere along the way, and they're not here anymore, but nonetheless, they were great cars. Then we move along to post-war American elegance that aren't the classics, but there are a lot of nice cars in there, and it's such things as the Cadillac Opera Coupe in 1939, a Chrysler Roadster, Packard convertible, and a Touring sedan that's with a body by LeBaron. So those are all non-classics, but very interesting cars. Then we move along to post-war American elegance, and one of my favorites. This is a bunch of cars, not usually concours level necessarily, but very interesting and nice cars, like the 1964 Lincoln Continental Convertible with suicide doors, the 1954 Buick Skylark, which was iconic for GM at the time, a 53 Packard Caribbean, which is also a special model, Oldsmobile Toronado, cars along those lines, which are really interesting. We then move to post-war European elegance, which is a difficult class to fill because there's not a lot of these cars around. But we do have a Fashion Vega. We have 13 cars in this class actually, a Mercedes-Benz, a 300 SL, a Jensen Interceptor, Mercedes-Benz 220S. A lot of cars that are not quite classics, but are definitely elegant and definitely interesting styled. Then we move to under 3 liter European sports cars. That's a very popular class. BMWs, Lotus, Volvo, Morgans, Alfa Romeo, AC Bristols, which was the forerunner to the Cobras, Daimler, those kinds of cars. Very popular and very well attended. And then we have the iconic Jaguar E-types, which were both elegant and fast. So they kind of are a bridge between the elegant and fast themes. We have six or seven of those all the way from Series 1 to Series 3. They were built from 1961 to 1973 and are, as Enzo Ferrari once said, the most beautiful car design ever. So. And then to one of my very favorite classes, everybody does muscle cars and those kinds of things, but we have a class this year called American Speed, and that class was designed to identify and show the cars that really started the horsepower race and led to the muscle cars. and it's cars like the Oldsmobile, the Rocket 88s of 1949, 1950, the Chrysler 300C, the supercharged Fords, the Ford Thunderbolts, which is a small body with a huge engine in it, a Studebaker Avanti. Those cars all started the horsepower race, and we wanted to give them credit this year and not call them muscle cars because they weren't at the time, but they certainly started all this. then we move along to Brass and Antiques. We actually combined the classes this year. That's not typical. And pardon me, did somebody want to say something? I'm talking a lot. So,
well, we're enjoying it, but I want to relate it to what people are, you know, used to seeing. Like when we talk about American muscle cars, I mean, this is related to the Fast and Furious series.
Yeah.
Lots of big block Chevys and things like that. Tell us about that class again and what people are going to see.
Okay, in the American Speed class, we do have a 1970 Chevelle SS396, which is the classical muscle car, which is a mid-sized body and a big block engine. And we also have the Ford Mustangs from the era, the high-performance Ford Mustangs, the Pontiacs of that era, the Catalinas 2+2, 421 cubic inch engines. And again, the Thunderbolt. These are all cars that people that grew up in the 60s and 70s will identify with as cars they either rode around with or their uncle had or whatever. And they were the first part of the American horsepower race. So does that sort of answer your question?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Okay, and then we move. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jackie.
Yes, Jackie.
Well, I don't want to interrupt the flow, but I have to ask you, it's a compound question. Now, when you're planning a show, or when anybody's planning a show, or this is a concourse, so it's a competition. When you decide what your theme is going to be, and you put the word out that this is what we're doing this year, how does it work? Do you list the types of cars that would fit each category, or do people submit their car to you and you decide whether or not it fits a category? How does that work?
You want to take I'll just tell you from my point of view, the way the theme comes together is basically Ray and I did this probably over a year ago. We decided that was going to be the theme for the next event. And then between me and four or five key class managers, we put together the list of classes that we wanted. First, we identified the featured marks, which turned out to be Porsche and Packard this year, representing elegance and speed. And then we put together a list of classes, usually 20 to 21. This year, we're down to 19 because we have a lot of cars. It's pretty well understood what cars fit in the classic era because those are all defined by the Classic Car Club of America. So we know what cars fit in there. Most of the owners that apply know what class they go into. They don't often put them on the sheet, but when we get them, we know immediately which class they go into or do not. Sometimes we don't have classes for certain cars. So that's kind of how it's put together. And it does evolve some during the year, during the car acquisition process. If we can't find all the right models for the class, we'll either expand it or change the years or the title. So anything you want to add to that, Ray?
No, that's basically it. And to answer your question, it's a combination of people do apply to show their car, and then in selected areas we go out and recruit. We go out and try and find people to show.
Actually, that's very true. Most of it is recruiting by the class managers, and those people are some of the most important people on the team because they know the owners, they know where to go to get the cars. And you're right, Ray. That's the predominant way we get these cars.
Oh, interesting. So if you have an idea, you have your classes set up, and people start submitting their cars. And then you're like, wait a minute, we're missing this year, this model. We need one of these. And then you know the people, and you can call them and say, hey, can you bring your car to this?
That's my job. If we have holes in the classes and the guys don't know where to go get them, I often help find the cars because I also know where to go. So you're right, Jackie. We do end up with not covering some of the territory we wanted to in the class, and it's kind of a last minute scramble sometimes. The other thing is that after Pebble Beach is over, we usually get a lot of those cars applying late because they didn't decide to come until after Pebble Beach. So they often have to be stuffed in. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
Next question.
Next question. Well, I'm not sure where to go with this. We've talked a little bit about the facility. We've talked a little bit about the timing throughout the day, 10 to 4 for guests. Where can people go to get tickets? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I wanted to mention our website. You can buy the tickets at our website. Our website is simply pvconcours, that's pvconcours.org. And if you go to our website, you can buy the tickets there in advance. We will obviously be selling tickets the day of the show. There's a $10 savings if you buy them in advance for the general admission ticket. It's $40 in advance. It'll be $50 day of the show. And under 13 are let-in free, kids under 13. Otherwise, they'll need a ticket. And then we also have a VIP event that's going on that I wanted to mention. We have a large tent that will be set up where we're doing a catered lunch. And so we have a VIP ticket that's $150, and that gets you free parking. It gets you into the show. It gets you the lunch. The lunch comes with two drinks. And then you're in a shaded, tented area for the award ceremony and for the lunch. You get essentially preferential seating for the award ceremony right there in front. And there's been a lot of interest in the VIP tickets, so I think that's going to be a real success today. And the Bites and Bashes is the name of the caterer that is catering that VIP lunch. And then we are also going to have beer and wine sales, and that's being done by Michael Schaefer of the Depot Restaurant in Torrance. Michael's going to be doing our beer and wine sales, which will be in that same general area for the public, for everyone. So it's going to be a great venue with all the things that we're offering. And then in addition, there are going to be food trucks at either end of the show. We should have about 6 to 8 food trucks on both ends, or about 4 on each end of the show, which will provide a variety of food trucks that should provide additional opportunities for lunch for the spectators. So the layout is going to be very good.
Okay.
Jackie and John, I wanted to mention some of the airplanes and a little bit about the other car exhibits we have. But would you be interested in that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So as Ray mentioned, we tried to match up the eras of the airplanes with the various classes. And one class I didn't mention was the hot rods. These are traditional hot rods that were built in the 30s and 40s. And for that area, we have what's called a Pitt Special biplane, which was a fabulous racer in the 30s. And for American Speed and Italian Speed, we have the FM2 Wildcat, which was a very hot 1940s airplane. For the Shelby and Corvette classes, these are all in one exhibit area. We have an F-14A Tomcat, which is one of the latest Air Force very hot planes. For the British sports cars and the Jaguar E-types, we have the Harrier aircraft from Europe, which is a British aircraft. Yeah, some of these are fascinating. We have a featured plane will be a C-53 transport, which is a DC-3 transport in Air Force markings, and that's going to be one of the featured airplanes. We mentioned the P-51.
Right.
For the American classics, both open and closed, we have what's called the Beach Stagger Wing, which is a beautiful 1933 to 1940 airplane. So we did try to match all of these up. And The other thing I wanted to mention was we have a lot of special exhibits. One of them in particular that we're pretty proud of is that we have a Vic Edelbrock we have a Vic Edelbrock Memorial Performance Award as one of our awards, and we also have a featured exhibit with Vic Edelbrock's cars in there, and that's going to be a very interesting exhibit. We have several new car exhibitors, not part of the show, but they're exhibiting in a separate area, including Ferrari and Alfa Romeo and Lexus and Tesla. So there's going to be on the way in an exhibit of a lot of the new cars. And they're, of course, not on the field.
Porsche. Oh, Porsche is going to be well represented.
Oh, yeah, Porsche. I'm sorry, I didn't mention that. But all in all, this is going to be a very interesting field. I'm not sure we mentioned that our beneficiaries this year are the Western Museum of Flight and the Boys Club of Boys and Girls Club of San Pedro. Cindy Maka, who is the executive director of the Western Museum of Flight, was also our airplane acquisition chair. So she has done a fabulous job, and we're really glad to have them as a partner.
I know Cindy quite well. As a matter of fact, she's the one that set up my flight. I just looked it up. I flew in a T-6 Texan.
Yeah, that's right. T-6, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I took a flight in that earlier this year. We did.
You and your mom.
No, wait. This was just me.
Oh, that's right. All right.
Yeah, this was
not
just me.
Yeah.
No. We went out over PV and we went south and we came up and I was a little nauseous, but it was a once in a lifetime experience. Very, very, very exciting. And now I have to ask. Now, I would imagine that a lot of these car owners, these specialty car owners, are a lot of them into.
It turns out that we have 14 planes. Six of them are coming from owners on the airport that Cindy recruited. Actually, eight. And of those, four of them are entering cars. Also, it's interesting on the field down there. There are probably between 8 and 10. Car collectors who have hangars down there with aircraft in them, but also a few cars. So you're absolutely right, Jackie. There is definitely a crossover, and these guys are really excited about this.
I bet they are. Isn't it a common knowledge that people like Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld, don't they keep their car collections in hangars at airports?
Of course, Jay Leno's is on Burbank Airport, and it's huge. And if you've never been there, I hope you can wangle a ticket sometime to get in there. It's just a fabulous place.
Yeah, this is
so
exciting.
So here we go. Yes.
This is exciting.
Amazing.
This is exciting. what we were talking about earlier about the venues for an event like this, how they are far and few between what will fit your bill. Do you guys put a cap on how many people can attend this? I mean, it's at an airport. I mean, in the past, even golf courses are huge, but this is at an airport. So do you put a cap on ticket sales? Like, do you sell out?
No, generally we don't. That would be a nice problem to have, by the way. But no, we like to encourage as many people to come as possible. Realistically, we'll probably have a crowd around 3,000. We would like to get it bigger than that, hopefully, maybe 4,000. In the past, we've been up around those numbers, and so that's what we're polling for. But no, we don't put a cap on it because we want as many people to come as possible. You know, Dick mentioned our beneficiaries, but it's important for people to realize that we're a not-for-profit organization, a 501c3, and so we're doing this for the Boys and Girls Club of L.A. Harbor and then the Western Museum of Flight, as Dick already mentioned, and that's the reason for it. It's all volunteers. We probably are going to have about 150 volunteers putting this thing on. It's an all-volunteer organization, and we're doing it for those beneficiaries.
The beauty of this event, what you're doing with it this year, is that it's crossover. You're not just going to get the people that like cars. You're going to get the people that like planes.
That's the idea.
That was part of the strategy, definitely.
Yeah, that's how we were reinventing ourselves and to try and go to a different type of show to broaden our appeal to a bigger group of people. And so hopefully that's going to be successful.
Right. And Ray, of course, we don't want to forget our sponsors. Let's talk about the sponsors for the event.
We've got quite
a collection.
We do. We got some great sponsorship. As I mentioned, Robinson Helicopters, our hosting sponsor. The City of Torrance has been fantastic to work with and really helped us in pulling all this together. The City of Torrance is a sponsor, and Discover Torrance is a sponsor. We have Medawar Fine Jewelers. They have been Robert Medawar has been a sponsor for years, and he continues. We have Cars USA. That's a classic automotive relocation services. They're one of our big sponsors. A couple, Cheryl and Shell Heldberg, Discover Torrance, I mentioned. Premier Business Bank is a sponsor. And a big sponsor this year we're really pleased with is Porsche South Bay. Porsche South Bay came in and sponsoring, and then as we mentioned, they're going to show about six new Porsches in the entry area. Ferrari South Bay is a sponsor. Crenshaw Lumber, Superformance, Rusnik South Bay, the Maserati Alfa Romeo place, Barrett Jackson, the auction house, is a sponsor. Terranea, the resort, is a sponsor, and Hanson and Adkins Auto Transport, and then also Edelbrock is a sponsor this year, which is great.
And Automobile Driving Museum.
And the Automobile Driving Museum in El Segundo. They're also a sponsor. So we've got a real good range of sponsors. Once again, all of that is listed right on our website. If you go to the website, you can see all the sponsors.
Right, right, right. TVConcours.org. TVConcours.org.
.org. And there is, if I do say so, it's a good website. It's got a lot of good information on it. You can see the class list. You can see the sponsorship, instructions, a really good section on answering questions, how to get there, all that sort of thing. So it's all right there on the website.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be this is an event. You can make a day of it. All right,
absolutely.
Bring the whole family. You can bring the whole family. You'll get on the tarmac. There's going to be food and beverages. There's going to be everything. It's going to be everything. Everything you need. You can just spend the whole day there.
Right.
Absolutely.
Do you recommend people bringing, because I know in the past at other venues, you've recommended people can bring like their beach chairs, their camp seats and stuff?
Well, generally, no. I don't think this is going to lend itself as well to that. We are going to have seating. We're going to have seating and places to eat, tables and places, and we're going to have some shade tents and things like that. So it'd probably be best not to bring beach chairs and things like that since we're on the tarmac.
I think this year we've got a lot of requests. We are allowing two chairs behind the cars, but no umbrellas because that would break up the photography end of it. So, but
Those are exhibitors.
Yeah,
exhibitors like to bring chairs. Yeah, like to bring chairs because they want to stay with their car all day, and so they bring chairs.
Right.
But spectators, no, we're not really recommending the spectators bring chairs.
Okay. All right.
It's not that kind of thing either, Jackie. And this field is fairly long, and there's 19 classes. If you want to see the show, you got to walk around. And
you got to walk around,
at least 15 minutes of class, so you can see this, 4 hours. It's almost like the Smithsonian. If you don't keep moving, you won't get through it. So.
Right.
Well, I love this. I think that the reimagining has come up with what a synergy of venues, a synergy of sponsors. I'm sure that this is going to be quite a success. I don't know how you can pre-gauge it, but do you have advanced ticket sales that you feel are better than you did before, or how do you gauge potential success?
Well, one of the challenging things is people buy the tickets in the last week, and we've experienced
that
in the past. So our ticket sales, our advanced ticket sales for this week have been pretty strong. I haven't looked at the number recently, but they're fairly strong. Now what's going to happen is starting next week, they'll really take off, and we'll have a better understanding of exactly how many we're going to have. And then a lot of people do still buy the day of. So usually the ticket sales the day of the event are pretty strong for the people that make that last minute decision.
Yeah, that's and that's going to be something that I think that comes in, especially with families, like with young children. They wait until the last minute. You know, they wake up Saturday morning or Sunday morning, they get their things done, they're like, what are we going to do today? And and that's where my website comes in. You know, people, you know, it's very active on the weekend mornings. Because people are like, okay, what are we going to do with the kids today? You know, or what are we going to do today? So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, people wait till the last minute, which, you know, Joe, makes me crazy. Makes me crazy. I'm a planner, you know.
Yeah, we had a couple other factors, too. One is that we missed last year, and we all knew we were taking a chance by not having the show last year because there are a lot of Concours in California, and it's extremely competitive now, many more than when we first started this. So without doing it last year, a lot of people didn't realize until just recently that, yeah, the show's back on. And the other thing was that a lot of people, I heard it from a lot of people, if you guys have it on a Palisades golf course again, we're not coming. So it's taken us a while to make people realize it's in a completely different venue. So I think those two things have slowed things down a little bit, but it's starting to pop right now.
Well,
that's interesting. Was that the exhibitors or the audience that said if you have it on the golf course again, we're not coming?
Most of the exhibitors were okay, but some of them were annoyed at how long it took them to get on and off the field. But most of that came from the attendees who had to park up on top of the hill and take the buses, which really didn't work very well. I think we probably left hundreds of people turning around and going home rather than fighting it. So
this is a
lot easier. The parking's great here. A lot of room for trailers, as Ray mentioned earlier. So it's completely different, and we're hoping that we get enough of them back. I think we're going. I'm confident we're going to. But there were some factors that slowed us down a little bit.
Everybody's very positive about what we've got planned for this year. When I talk to exhibitors and spectators, they're excited about coming to the show. They think it's a great idea. And I'm getting very positive feedback.
Oh, I imagine. Right. I imagine. The venue alone is going to be a huge improvement. But then the addition of exhibiting the planes with the cars, as we said, there's going to be crossover there. And, okay, for the $64,000 question, Dick Gray, how on earth are you going to top this next year?
Good question. Well, there's one aspect. Some of the airplane owners have said, you know, this is a high-end, classy event. Can we get the airplanes judged like an airplane show? And, of course, Ray and I and the guys couldn't answer that right now because none of us are qualified airplane judges, and that's a much different thing. So if you did that kind of thing, you'd attract a lot of airplanes, and we haven't figured out how to do that yet, but clearly that's a potential area for expansion. We'll just have to see how it works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well,
also,
that would be,
with a successful show this year, it creates a lot more buzz and a lot more interest for the future. So people will want to be involved.
Right.
We would have to open up and trying to recruit aircraft from. We've been very fortunate this year in that there's a number of historic planes located right there at Zamperini Field. We would probably have to open it up and see about getting planes that would be willing to fly in from other locations. But I think if it's a successful show, which we're counting on it being, then people will be interested in taking part.
Now, lately, gentlemen, Jackie and I, have been involved in an effort to move beyond audio, beyond the podcast, into video. And one of the questions that comes to my mind is seeing a show about the Concours d'Elegance. I mean, a video show. Imagine, I don't know, Huell Hauser, if he was still alive, how he might do a show about the Concours d'Elegance. Is there media involved? Are you doing video of the event?
We do video of the event, and if you go to our website, you can see some of that right now with past events. Mm. We've got video of past events on our website right now. So, and then, yes, we will be doing video of this event so that we have something to share afterwards.
And
that's
I think
wonderful.
Palos Verdes seniors that do that, Ray, their videos are available for probably five or six of the previous shows. And you should also know that Dave Koontz from ABC7 is one of the hosts of the show, and I usually drive him around, and he interviews a lot of people on the field. So I would think we're going to try to get that in the video this year because it's pretty interesting.
Right. If you go to the website, there's a section called Past Events, and if you click on that, it goes mm-hmm. down through all the past years, Los Verdes, and mm-hmm. also when we were at Trump. And then there are videos with each one of those, at least in the recent years, there's videos. And then otherwise, there's very good photographs of some of the past shows and who the winners were and
right.
all that sort of thing.
Speaking
right,
of past
right.
shows, Dick, how long have you been doing the Concours?
Well, the best I can count is something between 14 and 16 years. I kind of lost track, but slightly before I retired, I was a class manager for 3 or 4 years, and then I've been doing it ever since. So that's since 2005, so it's something like 14, 16 years. It was before 2005, so.
Right.
And what other venues have you had it at?
We had it at Rolling Hills Country Club. We've had it at Trump two different times. There's an interesting story to that one we won't go into, I don't think, but Trump two different times, and then Los Verdes last year. All of those were very nice venues, but as Ray mentioned earlier, they all had a lot of issues with public parking and getting people in and out and all that kind of thing. We did consider a couple other sites, but those are the four I have worked. Before that, I don't know, Ray, were you there when it was at PV High?
We started out at Palos Verdes High School up on top of the hill for our first shows, and we were there for a few years, and then we moved to Trump National. It was actually Ocean Trails, and we moved out there. And we were at Trump
when they had an 18th hole.
Right. Actually, we were there. We were there right around that time frame. Fortunately, no cars were out there. And so then from Trump. Actually, I don't mind sharing the reason we did not go back to Trump in 2015. It has nothing to do with politics. In 2015, the Trump organization had landed a big PGA tournament. And the tournament was going to be about a month after our show would have been. And there was no way the PGA would allow cars on the fairways prior to one of their big tournaments. They take over and they want those fairways to be pristine. So basically we were told we simply couldn't have the show there in 2015. So that's the reason we went off and looked for Los Verdes and made that move to Los Verdes. So it had nothing to do. Now, ironically, along came then, we're doing all of that the early part of 2015, and then we started into the elections, and with some of the rhetoric that was said during the elections, the PGA pulled the tournament from Trump, and so that tournament never happened.
It ended up being a net plus for us not to be there because of some of our constituents. But it was a very interesting situation.
And so we'd already made the decision to go to Los Verdes, and so that was done. And so now, as we mentioned, because of the infrastructure challenges at Los Verdes, we've moved on, and we're down at Zamperini,
right.
and we're really looking forward to it.
Right. Well, I will never forget 2015. It was so beautiful.
That was a great venue. That was really a great venue.
Wow. Amazing. But I am excited about the new venue. I think it's kind of an evolution, but also a coming together, if not maybe coming home. Muscle cars and muscle planes, I don't think you can get any better.
It's going to be a very exciting show. I think we're going to wow you again this year.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So the theme of elegance and speed is elegance and speed is meant to pick up both ends of the collector car spectrum. So I think that's going to be a big draw also.
Right.
Let me ask you something. Speaking of, did you guys plan to bring in the planes, or did you look at that venue and then thought, oh, let's add the planes? How did that happen?
It was really we looked at the venue and said we got to add planes. I mean, the venue just called for it. It just gave us that new opportunity that we were looking for. We hit upon that right away. Because that gave us something new for the show, and the venue made it happen.
Plus, we got a lot of support from the pilots and from Cindy, and it was so natural, it would be stupid to pass that up. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's setting this up.
It seems like such a huge, huge undertaking. I mean, these cars are, it's a whole thing in itself with just the cars, what you guys do, what the whole organization does to, it's just an undertaking, but then to add the planes to it, and I understand that this year it's just for show, that possibly in future years you'll also, would it be called a concourse for planes?
I'm not sure what they call them, but it would be along those lines. And Jackie, you did hit on, as exhibition committee chair, I that's probably one of the most difficult things for me to handle and my team, is to sequence the planes onto the field and then the cars as well. So you're talking about 14 planes having to be in position and then about 200 cars getting on the field all before 9 o'clock in the morning on show day.
Wow.
It's a challenge.
Make sure there are no cars on the tarmac when the planes are coming in. That's the
most important thing. That's exactly
it's number
right.
one.
All right. I want you to give out this information again. This is going to be, would you pronounce it for me, please? Because I never seem to get it right. The Concours d'Elegance.
D'Elegance, right. Concours d'Elegance.
D'Elegance. Okay. It's on Sunday, October 1st. At Zamperini Field in Torrance. It's from 10 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. And now, where can people get information, get tickets? Give us all that information again. Give out the website.
The website, again, was PV Concours. That's PVCONCOURS.org. And everything is right there. All this information, where it is, tickets, all of that. Just go to that website, and I think you'll find everything you need.
And how much are tickets again?
If you buy them now on the website, the general admission ticket is $40. The VIP package is $150. The day of the show, the general admission ticket is going to be $50.
All right, so save $10. If it's a family of four, you're saving $40 there. Buy your tickets now. Don't wait.
Right.
But people wait. People wait. They wait till the last minute. That's okay. More money in your pocket.
Yeah, it makes us nervous, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not only is it a an amazing venue with 1,500 units of parking readily accessible, but it's also easy for people to get to. It's very freeway friendly. So,
it's all flat.
It's
flat.
I hope
it's
you
flat.
Get a
very
ton
easy
of
to walk around.
LA.
Oh, God, you can wear heels. You can wear heels.
No, don't wear heels.
Yeah.
It's bigger than you think.
No. Yeah. I know. Hey, I know from personal experience, I've known this for years, but you go to these events and you still see a ton of women trying to walk on grass and heels, and it's not a good thing. Yeah.
Well, if you see photos from Pebble Beach, you'll see a lot of elegantly dressed women with heels, and of course it's on grass and all, but still it's not easy to walk. This
no.
is definitely not a field, a high heel area for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to, you know, be comfortable. You got a lot of walking to do. There's a lot to do and see.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And, of course, it's also a beautiful area. There's plenty of places to eat and plenty of great hotels if you're going to be traveling far, if you want to spend the evening and drive home the next day. It's going to be great for that. This could be a regional event that everyone can be proud of. I'm sure that's one of the things in the minds of the city managers at Torrance, because it's so iconic, and you have Louis Zamperini Field.
Of course, the history.
Yep.
Everybody, you see, we've always known about Louis. Now the rest of the world knows about Louis.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
I do want to add the airport commission and the city of Torrance have been great to work with. They've had very much a very can-do attitude of wanting to make this be a success, and that has made all the difference in the world. The mayor's behind it. The city council's behind it. It was unanimous when they voted on it, and they were all very enthusiastic about it.
You know, that's so good to hear. It's so good to hear that at least one city in the South Bay is functioning correctly. We won't go into details. We won't go into details. But that's great. Hey, I live in Torrance. I'm very happy with the way the city is being run. I'm thrilled that they decided to take this and run with it. I think it's an incredible your event, just in general over the years, has always been an incredible event. Combining it with the Torrance Airport, the airplanes, and the history just makes it so much more incredible. And on a personal note, you know, as I said, I live in Torrance, so the day of this event, I'm going to get to see all of these planes flying over my house into Torrance Airfield. So it's very exciting.
Right. Actually, you know, you just hit on something too, Jackie. It's a static show. There will not be any flying involved with the show. So we're just, all the planes are going to be static on the ground and for people to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't want any aeronautics going
no,
on with,
not over
with all those very expensive cars on the field.
No,
right.
But believe it or not, we did get some inquiries about how about if we do a flyby on all that, and we can't afford this year to get involved in that. It's a lot more difficult to time that, and the FAA has
right.
to be involved and all of that. So it's possible
right.
for future shows, but certainly not this year.
Well, we want it to be
right.
a success for the community, too. And the community, there's people in the community that are not wild about flybys, so we don't
yeah.
want to go down that path. We want this to be a real success for the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you've outdone yourselves again.
Hold
kudos.
That thought, Jackie. Wait till the show's over.
Okay.
I know. I know in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
We appreciate your support. We really do. And I can't
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I can't thank you and Joe enough for having us on the show and give us this opportunity. The support is fantastic. And I don't think you're going to regret it. I think you're going to see a great show next weekend.
Yep.
I know it's going to be
a
great show. Yeah.
Yeah. You've done such a great job for all these years. We're thankful. I'm sure the community at large is thankful. The community of car owners and collectors are thankful to have another extremely well-run event. Everyone knows that the Concours d'Elegance is well-run and run by true collectors, true aficionados of automobiles. And now you're adding and combining the automobile and plane owners. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of synergy on the field, a lot of people meeting each other for the first time potentially and finding they have a lot of things in common. This is just the beginning of something wonderful. This is amazing.
We certainly hope so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm thrilled. And so now, Dick, you've been doing this for, well, we're going to say 16 years, 17 years.
Okay.
You're in for next year?
Do I have to answer that question right now? This is a bad time to answer.
No,
I
want to hear his answer.
Because this is the time, say, 10 to 14 days before the event, where I probably get 8 fire drills a day. This owner is not happy. We need to get this car in. We need 3 more judged. We need – this won't fit here. So this is the wrong time to ask me that question. But I think the tentative answer is, yeah. I mean, this is pretty exciting stuff. It's a step up from what we did. Definitely a step up. And it's – the production of this kind of event is going to get more complex. So we'll see.
Well, and then, of course, assuming we have a successful show this year, it'll be so much easier to do it in the same venue because there's always these first-time challenges that you have to work your way through.
Right.
Yeah, this is the kind of event where you can plan 100%, but only 65% of that happens. So it's up to us who have done it before to cover that 35% on show day. Interesting.
Dick Kroxall.
All right, Joe, we got
Ray Johnson. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. This was great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful venue. We can't wait. And, of course, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
All right, that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.